Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, fold it in half. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Adi Leela, Chapter 7, Text 38. Shabha Nishtarite Prabhu Kripa Abhata Shabha Nishtarite Kare Chaturi Apar, apar. Shabha nishtarite prabhu kripa obata. Shabha nishtarite kore chaturi apar. Shabha nishtarite prabhu kripa obata. Shabha nishtarite kore chaturi apar. Translation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in order to deliver all the fallen souls. Therefore, he devised many methods to liberate them from the clutches of Maya. Purport. It is the concern of the Acharya to show mercy to the fallen souls. In this connection, Deshkala Patra, the place, the time, and the object should be taken into consideration. Since the European and American boys and girls in our Krishna consciousness movement preach together, less intelligent men criticize that they are mingling without restriction. In Europe and America, boys and girls mingle unrestrictedly and have equal rights. Therefore, it is not possible to completely separate the men from the women. However, we are thoroughly instructing both men and women how to preach, and actually they are preaching wonderfully. Of course, we very strictly prohibit illicit sex. Boys and girls who are not married are not allowed to sleep together or live together, and there are separate arrangements for boys and girls in every temple. Grihasthas live outside the temple, for in the temple we do not allow even husband and wife to live together. The results of this are wonderful. Both men and women are preaching the gospel of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna with redoubled strength. In this verse, the words Shabha nishtarite kore chaturi apar indicate that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to deliver one and all. Therefore, it is a principle that a preacher must strictly follow the rules and regulations laid down in the Shastras, yet at the same time devise a means by which the preaching work to reclaim the fallen may go on with full force. Last night I spoke on the subject of citing Srila Prabhupada, and it's a topic that I intend to speak on now and further also. Oh, you got it. Okay, thank you very much. As it is a topic that is central to our movement, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness is constituted of Vaishnavas, more specifically Gauriya Vaishnavas, more specifically followers in the line of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, more specifically followers in the line of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and most specifically, we are followers of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, whose translations and purports on Shastra, as well as His written and spoken words, we consider to be authoritative. This is authority for us. Our movement is to be guided on that basis. Last night, I discussed the term interpret and interpretation, because Srila Prabhupada didn't like this word very much, the concept of interpreting what the Shastras say or what the Acharya says. But we are in that situation where we are interpreting, and we have little choice but to do so. So how can we do that if Srila Prabhupada didn't like that? Well, I gave the idea that the Bhagavad Gita is as it is, it should be taken, but Srila Prabhupada's directions, especially on social matters, could be understood in different ways. So we can use the common word for giving different understandings. It is interpret. I had this verse read today because the purport to this verse is it's very inspiring, but that wasn't particularly the reason that I read it. I read it because it is a verse that is often cited to promote to justify a particular interpretation of Srila Prabhupada's social teaching. So as this broadly one interpretation, which we may call a liberal or modernist versus conservative or traditionalist, these two broad categories of interpretation of the social direction of the Krishna conscious movement is a major issue within the movement at this time, and this verse is especially cited to justify what we may call a liberal interpretation of Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And I'm going to try in this talk here not so much to promote one particular understanding, and I think you all know, most of you know, which understanding I stand by, as to show how there may be different understandings, because there is so many factors. When just take the text as it is, then there's no interpretation. What is this? Just keeps on doing things. I just looked at it and it... Okay, it went back to normal. Super sensitive. Artificial intelligence. There may be different understandings. Now, one reason for that could be that Srila Prabhupada apparently said different things in different times and different places and different circumstances to different people. Another reason, so then we have to try and find, well, you may say, well, this understanding is better. No, this understanding is better. Prabhupada said that, but he meant this. Or that one thing is a general rule and another is an exception. So this is where differences may come. What one devotee takes as the general rule, someone else will take as the exception. Why do we do that? There may be different reasons for that. One reason may be that we come to Krishna consciousness with various preconceptions. There is a term, sanskara, which may be literally interpreted or translated as impression, by which that means that in this life and in previous lives, we've had various experiences, we've been subjected to we have had various types of association, and therefore we have a certain way of looking at the world. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks about this Shraddhamayo Yang Purusha. Yo yat shraddha sa eva saha. Everyone has a particular kind of faith, and according to one's particular kind of faith, one is classified. And he gives three broad categories: the sattvic, the mode of goodness; the rajasic, the mode of passion; and the tamasic, in the mode of ignorance. So there are various worldviews we come with, which in this lifetime we're all very much influenced by the culture in which we are raised, I presume, although maybe I'm wrong. Prahlada Ananda Maharaj might or may not agree with that statement, that as we travel around the world, we see there are very great cultural differences. And it tends to influence the devotee's whole attitude and approach to Krishna consciousness. Would you agree with that, Maharaj? Maybe I shouldn't ask that, but I'm going to get an argument right here. For instance, we could say that some people have a more sentimental approach. I just came from Russia. And others, due to their culture, it's difficult to get a smile out of them because they're very... Sweden's exactly the same as South America. I disagree with you there. I think you're what's the word? Speaking ironically, Sweden is, it's almost antipathetical or something like that to South America in more ways than one. So we tend to be very much influenced by a culture, by the particular association that we take, even after coming to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, we find many, many devotees in the world today who are convinced that Ritvikism is the way. Jesus is the only way, the truth, and the light. Prabhupada is the only way, the truth, and the light. There's no one after him. Why did they think like that? Not because they went through all the instructions and thought about it in a neutral way, because they were preached to and brought into Krishna consciousness by people, devotees, we may not even call them devotees if we like, who ascribe to that theory. And those who come into the Guruvad system may also reject Ritvikism without having gone through all the discussions and this and that. It's not that very interesting, and just reject it because that's the association they got. They develop faith in the devotees who preach to them about Krishna consciousness, and therefore they tend to follow them. And to a large extent, we have to do that because we can't. If we're going to make a start in Krishna consciousness, we can't wait to study the whole philosophy. And then you study the whole philosophy, and maybe to get a minimal understanding of it may take at least a year or two if we study intensely day after day. Then if at the end we think, no, I don't like it, let's try something else. Let's go to Osho and see what his philosophy is. Oh, we can't live like that. You won't finish your life if you have to go through every philosophy completely. And anyway, we can't understand Krishna consciousness without practicing it. So we're influenced by various, by the culture that we're raised in. We're influenced, and it's not just a matter of the staid Swedes versus the sentimental South Americans, or may I say Slavs also. But there are much deeper and traits in various cultures also. For instance, in the Western culture, it's very much part of the culture, the whole approach to how we think about everything. For instance, the idea that of evolution, chemical evolution, biological evolution, social evolution is very much part of the way people in the Western world think. There's also the influence of education, the idea that, well, everything, scientific method, everything has to be understood clearly, everything has its own category, linear thinking. That's there to some extent in Vedic culture with Sankhya philosophy, which also always analyze everything. But the step-by-step method of teaching is really not part of the Vedic culture, and we can see that in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna talks about you're not the body in various places throughout the Bhagavad Gita, and it, according to the Western outlook, it doesn't seem to be a direct progression from A to B. And same thing with the Srimad Bhagavatam, and with any shastra. And there's an idea that we categorize everything, understand it rationally. But the Vedic system begins with the supposition that you can't understand everything rationally, and to attempt to do so means you won't understand. You can understand, but not to some extent by a rational method, but the rational method has severe limitations because reality is ultimately beyond that which is considered rational. Achintya kalu ye bhava na tangs tarkena yojayet prakritebhyo parangyachcha tad achintyasya lakshanam. In dealing with that which is inconceivable, which means reality beyond that which we think we experience at each moment, we shouldn't try to use our standard methods of understanding because they won't work. That's the warning given. So getting back to this purport and the interpretations of it. This purport is, to put it maybe simplistically, used to justify gender rights within the Krishna consciousness movement, that men and women should be equal in gender roles. Srila Prabhupada uses the term boys and girls here. He often used that term. That was maybe apt when Srila Prabhupada was writing this, as the average age of his disciples was probably around 20 or early 20s. And also most of Srila Prabhupada's disciples at that time were unmarried. And in India, until someone is married, they're generally called a boy or a girl, if they're female. Maybe from the previous custom of having boys and girls married very young. So Srila Prabhupada writes here that in Europe and America, boys and girls mingle unrestrictedly and have equal rights. And therefore, we allow that to some extent, Srila Prabhupada says. And this is having very good results for preaching. And the boys and girls are preaching very nicely, both of them. So the idea is that, well, that's what Prabhupada said, so we should perpetuate this. Another outlook on the traditional, what we may call the traditionalist position of interpreting Srila Prabhupada's instructions, is that although Srila Prabhupada made adjustments for the Western world, where boys and girls mingle unrestrictedly and have equal rights. He did not favor this kind of civilization. In fact, he called it, he used terms like cat and dog civilization, animal civilization, and so on. And he often spoke, quoting from Shastra, how separation between male and female is required, otherwise it's very dangerous for spiritual life. It's very dangerous even for, what to speak of spiritual life, to have an even human civilization. There must be restricted mixing between men and women. He often quoted a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which also appears in Manu, the Matra Svasva, Duhitrava, Naviviktasano Bhavet, Balavan Indriya Gramo, Vidvangsam Apikarshati. That a man should not sit close even to his mother, sister, or daughter, because the senses are so strong that they will agitate the mind. And commenting on this verbally, Srila Prabhupada would often say, well, who would be agitated sitting next to his mother, sister, or daughter? Only some ignorant rascal. But then again, Srila Prabhupada would quote, Vidvangsamapi, even a learned person can be disturbed in such a situation. The senses are so strong. Therefore, restriction between male and female is required. And then comes the whole concept of Varnashram Dharma, which Srila Prabhupada spoke about, very much described in much detail, as Shastra, including Srimad Bhagavatam, does, and said should be instituted. In one place, Srila Prabhupada said that the big plan behind Varnashram Dharma is to regulate human society to help in decreasing sexual desire, which is the binding force in material existence. Among the 18,000 verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, one of those that Srila Prabhupada often cited is the Pungsastriya Mithuni Bhavametam Tayoraho Hridaya Grantimahu Ato Griha Kshetra Sutapta Vitair Janasya Mohoyam Ahamameti. The binding principle in material existence is the attraction between male and female. And when there's a specific attraction between a male and a female, then it forms a very tight knot on the heart. From this attraction arises attachment to a home, a particular home, my house, home sweet home, as it's said in English. There's probably some similar saying in your language. To one's own particular home, country, to one's children, relatives, society, wealth. And in this way, one is illusioned, thinking in terms of me and mine. So Varnashram society is designed so that one can live with these attachments, not trying to artificially cut them immediately, because for most people to try to, if they try to cut it immediately, they will be unsuccessful. And as we have many times seen within our movement, devotees who try to suddenly renounce but who are not fit for that often fall down to a level lower than that before they tried for a highly renounced position. So it's meant for making gradual progress, that there is some allowance for sense gratification, but at the same time, the Krishna conscious application of Varnashram Dharma is that sthane stita shudigatang vatanuvang manobhi. One should remain in one's position, but go on hearing about Krishna and dedicating one's life to him, so that a time will come, and there are many, many examples given in Srimad Bhagavatam and in Shastra, a time will come when a householder feels that, okay, I've had enough of all this griha kshetra sutapta vitai, home, family, friends, money, children, relatives, society, and all the rest. And now it's time to renounce and take to Krishna consciousness exclusively, without all these disturbances and distractions. So that's the traditionalist stance, that Srila Prabhupada wanted to, as far as possible, reestablish Varnashram Dharma. Srila Prabhupada said it's not fully possible at the present time, but he said it is somewhat possible, and he wanted to do that. Therefore, we have two interpretations of this verse, of this purport. One party will say that this Varnashram, it's not at all practical. No one's ready for that. Let's just preach. If we try to preach Varnashram and all this extreme, what to the present world seems to be extreme social policies, our own devotees, they're not ready to follow. Let's give all energy to giving the holy name, which is the Yuga Dharma, which is fully transcendental. Varnashram, after all, is a material arrangement. It may be favorable for Krishna consciousness, but it's a material arrangement. And some of those who take the liberal position also seem to be influenced by modern Western materialistic way of thinking, and they don't like the concept, which is the hierarchical concept, which is very much part of Varnashram society, which is really antithetical to the whole project of egalitarianism in the Western world, with all humans either in democratic societies, beginning with the United States of America, and then France, and then the Eastern Bloc, as it used to be called, with communism and socialism. Although democracy and communism were supposed to be ideologically opposed, they both had as a root supposition the idea that all humans are equal. The Varnashram system, of Varnashram philosophy, says yes, even more so, not only all humans, all living beings are equal. Why only humans? Even the trees and the ants, all living beings are equal. But materially we are not equal. There are distinct and important differences, and people should be dealt with differently. Different people should be accorded certain rights and privileges that do not accrue to others. So this is really not at all light in the world in general today, to say that someone can be intrinsically, materially superior to someone else is considered highly abusive, fascistic, the word may be used. Those devotees who want to promote a more liberal social approach to Krishna consciousness, they say that trying to promote Varnashram, it's not going to work. People aren't going to accept it. because the whole outlook of the modern world is so much against it. And it may be that those devotees themselves feel some abhorrence for that. It seems to me like that. And there are arguments to the contrary. The maybe the strongest argument to the contrary is that Srila Prabhupada himself mandated us repeatedly to establish this Varnashram. Although there may be exceptions also. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada said, no, this Varnashram is not possible. But then in other, repeatedly, and with Srila Prabhupada said, in one of his written purports, Srila Prabhupada writes, it must be done. So here's an example of how followers of Srila Prabhupada, who all accept his words to be the guiding principle of their life, they all accept that Srila Prabhupada's teachings, they are the teachings that should guide the Krishna consciousness movement. They all agree on this basic principle, but the application of it, and this is just one example of the application, they're very much divided on it. And that can be, in many, many other cases, even to things as trivial as should we eat chocolate or not. It's not the most important factor in the Krishna conscious movement, but there is discussion about it, and some devotees say, yes, Prabhupada said chocolate's okay, or Prabhupada ate chocolate, and others say, no, Harishori Prabhu has an anecdote. In the last Prabhupada's final order on chocolate was no, so that stands. So we may have chocolate vadis against no chocolate vadis. You may have in future some church within ISKCON where they all agree Srila Prabhupada wasn't poisoned, we should have traditional society, we didn't fall from the spiritual world, this, and that, and there's a major rift between them over whether or not we should eat chocolate. It could be like that. So there are many... there may be many different opinions. We may cite Srila Prabhupada said this in one case, he said this in another case. What is the background? Guru, sadhu, shastra, Srila Prabhupada comes in a parampara, a tradition. Did Srila Prabhupada mean to turn over the tradition? Did he reject the tradition by having boys and girls preach together? Or was this a time, place, and circumstance adjustment? Anecdotes may be cited on both sides. I'm not going to get into the issue now. I just want to, in a small way, I'm just trying to show here that there may be different interpretations of what Srila Prabhupada says, and it may be very difficult to say that this is the correct understanding and have everyone agree, which phenomenon also leads us to understand better, or can help us to understand better, why in Vedic culture to have a guru who guides one through all these issues is essential, because it's not that everyone can go through all the issues and try to understand it themselves, but rather one should approach someone who's taken the trouble to go through all these issues and just give his understanding. Now, at the present time within ISKCON, the GBC, Governing Body Commission, which Srila Prabhupada called the ultimate managing authority is trying to, according to a recent paper released by Hridayananda Das Goswami, take the role of the overarching acharya for the whole society. But it doesn't seem to be very successful in doing so. In other words, just as we know, if Prabhupada says something, then we take it very seriously. But it doesn't seem that anyone's, that's an exaggeration. Many devotees are not prepared to accept the authority of the GBC on issues like should we eat chocolate or not, or should women be initiating gurus or not, or the role of varnashram. So if you feel more confused now than you did at the beginning of the lecture, it might not be surprising, but I intend to churn this topic more in the upcoming seminars, which also one major point is that Srila Prabhupada also wanted devotees. He particularly wanted to make a movement of brahmanas who are independently thoughtful, which doesn't mean that you just think anything you like, but guided by guru, sadhu, and shastra. And that is called shastra yukti, to bring various statements of shastra together and understand them and preach them. And it may be also that in this particular case, it's not just one way or the other way. Obviously, the Western world is even more materialistic and degraded than it was in the 1970s when Srila Prabhupada made this purport. So there's definitely even a traditionalist must admit that that we can't just expect the whole world to change overnight, and we would be wise to continue making the kind of adjustments that Srila Prabhupada made for men and women in the Western world. But the traditionalists would say that this shouldn't be the standard forever, because the free mixing is socially a cause of disaster, and therefore we should strive to make varnashram communities and varnashram society as Srila Prabhupada mandated us to. There's much, much more can be discussed on this issue, and much, much has been discussed, and much more will be discussed. I'm just trying to give a little overview here now to try to show that it may not be that one side is right and the other is completely wrong. There may be good points from both sides. How to understand Srila Prabhupada and apply that practically in our movement. It may be different in different places, and there may be different branches within the society which have different social outlooks. There could be various attempted solutions to this deep divergence of opinion, which is all based, at least in the minds of those who have varied opinions, all based on Srila Prabhupada's instructions. If you would like to investigate the traditionalist outlook more, I have done so in one book, which I think is available here, called retitled Mothers and Masters. It's available here. And apart from that, I was told to finish at 9 o'clock, so I'll do so. There are 3 minutes, and if Paladananda Maharaj would like to say anything, or in the 3 minutes.
If the devotees were in the generation of our spiritual masters disagree on issues, then we could also expect that the disciples would have their own, over time, have developed their own opinions, sometimes maybe even very strong opinions on some of these matters. And if it happens that the disciple develops a different understanding of the matter to the understanding of his guru, would that make the disciple offensive or perhaps even spiritually weak?
Is that a question?
Yes.
Ultimately, yeah, if the disciple disagrees with the guru, does that make the disciple offensive or at least spiritually weak? On these topics, on social issues, or any topic, whether or not we fell from the spiritual world, when the gurus, God brothers themselves, don't agree, yeah. Ultimately, Krishna will decide. According to some followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati went against his guru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. According to some Gauriya Vaishnavas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was also deviated in various ways. Ultimately, but then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, no, the others, they're deviated. So who will judge? Srila Prabhupada said in this regard that the disagreement between Lalita Prasad and Bimala Prasad, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he said the disagreement is spiritual, but you won't see it like that, he said to his disciples. So better you don't get involved in it. Does it constitute a fall down? In some cases it may do. Then that will have to be Mahajano Yena Gatha Sapanta. The great devotees, they will have to take their opinion. We find in the Gauriya Vaishnava history that Rupa Kaviraj, one noted devotee, he chastised one female devotee, but she was more advanced than him. He fell down, or was considered to have fallen down, because he introduced some ideas of his own. He was rejected from what's considered the orthodox line of Gauriya Vaishnavas, but his sampradaya is still going on. As far as they're concerned, we're all deviated. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada often quoted Phalena Parichayate, that the mercy to spread the holy names of Krishna all over the world has gone to the followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and especially Srila Prabhupada. So that's a sign of Krishna's mercy. Krishna Shakti Bina Nahe Tar Pravartan. Kali Kali Yuga Dharma Nama Shankitan. Krishna Shakti Bina Nahe Tar Pravartan. In this Kali Yuga, the Yuga Dharma, the religious process, is the congregational chanting of the holy names. One who is not imbued with Krishna's special shakti, energy to do so, cannot do that, cannot establish that. So, does it become subjective? In one sense, yeah, but then a Vaishnava or a disciple's subjectivity goes as far as selecting under whose guidance he will prosecute spiritual life. Then after that, he takes Guru Mokha Padmavakya Chetete Korea Aika Ana Kariho Mane Asha. Who is representing Krishna? By following whom can I properly advance? Then you decide, then you go. That is your leap of faith. And one does so taking shelter of Krishna. Krishna, you please guide me to who Please guide me to who will guide me. Then you go and then you take it. These are very big topics, very grave topics. So you're also a very thoughtful person. In due course of time, you may investigate, meditate upon, and describe these topics more and more. The whole culture of guru and disciple is central to Vedic culture. And anyway, I won't speak more about this now. But I think you can see how this topic of how we understand what we understand, it's a very, very big topic. We do solve it to a large extent by approaching a guru, but we should also try to understand what the guru says and not just follow it blindly. Oh, my guru said this, therefore it's right. But then someone else's guru says opposite. Then we so just like Srila Prabhupada always enjoined us that we should not just say God is great, but we should know how he is great. But we, in the same way, we shouldn't just take it that, well, I accept my guru is right, but you should know if one is to be a proper representative and be able to defend that also. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.